Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jnanam Paramaguyame Yadvijnana Samanvitam Sarahasyam Tarangam Cha Grahana Gaditam Maya Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jnanam Paramaguyame Yadvijnana Samanvitam Sarahasyam Tarangam Cha Grahana Gaditam Maya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Jnanam, knowledge acquired. Parama, extremely. Goyam, confidential. Me, of me. Yet, which is. Vijnana, realization. Samanvitam, coordinated. Sarahasyam, with devotional service. Tat, of that. Angam cha, necessary paraphernalia. Grahana, just try to take up. Gaditam, explained. Maya, by me. Translation, the personality of Godhead said, knowledge about me is described in the scriptures, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential. And it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma is the topmost devotee of the Lord within the universe, and therefore the personality of God had replied to his four principal inquiries in four important statements, which are known as the original Bhagavatam in four verses. These were Brahma's questions. Number one, what are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? Two, how are the different energies of the Lord working? Three, how does the Lord play with his different energies? Four, how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? The prelude to the answers is this verse under discussion, wherein the Lord informs Brahma that knowledge of him, the Supreme Absolute Truth, as it is stated in the revealed scriptures, is very subtle and cannot be understood unless one is self-realized by the grace of the Lord. The Lord says that Brahma may take the answers as he explains them. This means that transcendental knowledge of the Absolute Supreme Being can be known if it is made known by the Lord himself. By the mental speculation of the greatest mundane thinkers, the Absolute Truth cannot be understood. The mental speculators can reach up to the standard of impersonal Brahman realization, but factually, complete knowledge of transcendence is beyond the knowledge of impersonal Brahman. Thus, it is called the supreme confidential wisdom. Out of many liberated souls, some may be qualified to know the personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, it is also said by the Lord himself, that out of many hundreds of thousands of people, one may try for perfection in human life. And out of many liberated souls, one may know him as he is. Therefore, the knowledge of the personality of God, it may be attained by devotional service only. Rahasyam means devotional service. Lord Krishna instructed Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita because he found Arjuna to be a devotee and friend. Without such qualifications, one cannot enter into the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, one cannot understand the personality of Godhead unless one becomes a devotee and discharges devotional service. This mystery is love of Godhead. Therein lies the main qualification for knowing the mystery. Hint is an important word. He's repeating it. Therein lies the main qualification for knowing the mystery of the personality of Godhead, to attain the stage of transcendental love of Godhead. Regulative principles of devotional service must be followed. The regulative principles are called vidhi bhakti, or devotional service of the Lord. And they can be practiced by a neophyte with his present senses. Such regulative principles are mainly based on hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord. Such hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord can be made possible in the association of devotees only. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended 5 main principles for attaining perfection in the devotional service of the Lord. The first is association with devotees, parentheses, hearing. Second is chanting the glories of the Lord. Third, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the pure devotee. Fourth, residing in a holy place connected with the Lord. And fifth, worshiping the deity of the Lord with devotion. Such rules and regulations are parts of devotional service. That's the tadangam cha in the verse. So, as requested by Lord Brahma, the personality of Godhead will explain all about the 4 questions put forward by Brahma and others also, which are parts and parcels of the same questions. So we'll go back to the verse. Jnanam paramaguyam me yadvijnanam samanvitam sarahasyam tad angam cha grahana gaditam maya. The personality of Godhead said, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. As a opening message for our Festival of the Holy Name, I thought to select this verse. And I thought of a title, Mystery Disclosed. But just as Krishna speaks of Bhagavad Gita, he discloses to Arjuna the most confidential knowledge, and factually it remains confidential, even he discloses it. Meaning, unless one is a devotee, it remains a mystery. Unless one is a devotee, even it's explained, one won't understand it. Like when the Pandavas were requested, or there was a murder plot. So part of the plan was they would go to the house of Lach. And we'll kill them. So they already had information that Duryodhana wanted to kill them. They just didn't know what the next move was on the chessboard. But Vidura knew, because he was intimately involved in the royal affairs of the palace. And so when the House of Lach plan was made, he knew all about it. And he came, as the Pandavas were leaving to go to this place, and he spoke what is described as enigmatic words. Enigmatic is a nice... Do you know what that word means? No idea, right? Puzzling. Mysterious words. Enigmatic. Like... something that's difficult to understand. You know, how does something happen? Remember when somebody first told me about a fax machine, I thought they were joking. You know, you put in a piece of paper over here and it comes out over there, same copy. Come on. And I said, I'm walking down an airport and I got this little machine, and out of the machine comes a paper that somebody put in somewhere else, right? I said, yeah. I said, come on. So for a technician, they know the mystery. But for someone that isn't a technician, like, you know, I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Or maybe some of the devotees here have the same characterization from family members. My nephew told me I'm the family enigma. No one can understand me. You're our brother. You're my uncle. But no one understands you. You're an enigma. That's what the word enigma means. New word for your vocabulary. So how do you enter into the mystery of something that's an enigma? From that person who is the enigma, they can disclose. Like the beginning of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, that which existed before we existed, nobody can know. It's really straightforward logic. That which existed before you existed, you can't know. You can say, perhaps, maybe. It seems to me that. Or you can even bluff and say, this is how it was. Big bang. That's how it was. Prove me wrong. And mass went flying all over space. How'd the bang happen? Well, once upon a time, there was a singularity. What's that? It's a dimensionless point with unlimited mass inside it. That's what a singularity is. Oh, okay. And then some time passed, tick, 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 and then kaboom! This unlimited mass went flying in all directions. Well, that's pretty interesting. Explanation of why things are the way they are. It's pretty puzzling. So Krishna says, no one can know. They can say perhaps maybe or bluff, but they don't know. They don't know. Unless that which existed before we existed disclose what existed before you existed. Then you can know. And otherwise you can't know. That's enigma. Puzzle. This verse is saying, Krishna is saying to Brahma, both the jnanam and vijnanam, both the theoretical knowledge and the practical realization of that theoretical knowledge, is parama guyam. 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 Guyam means confidential, like chapter 9. Of Bhagavad Gita. It's translated as the most confidential knowledge. That's the title. What is it in Sanskrit? Guhyam is somewhere in the Sanskrit. Paramaguhyam, perhaps. Whatever it is in Sanskrit. Confidential. How do you enter into chapter 9? Or how do you enter into Bhagavad Gita? Not by scholarship. Even the theory one can't know. Then tadviganam samanvitam. Samanvitam is in coordination with transcendental, with realization. So here's what's happened so far. This is what follows this verse, as Prabhupada said in the purport, is the Chaturshloki, the core, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam packed up, pressed into four verses. And then the rest of the Bhagavatam is elucidating those four verses in various ways. But everything is there in those four verses. And this verse is the prelude to those four verses. And what precedes the prelude is four questions by Lord Brahma. So we'll go back. In this chapter 9, there's a description of, as there is in chapter 8 of Canto 3, a description of the appearance of Lord Brahma. And before Lord Brahma, there's Lord Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And he's eternal, but he appears within each universe that's extended from the body of Mahavishnu, and that's a whole other. So Lord Brahma appears from the lotus of Garbhadakshay Vishnu's navel. Very interesting place for a lotus to grow. But it's described that that lotus and the bud of the lotus is the sum total karma of all the conditioned souls. That's a lot of karma. Sum total karma of all the conditioned souls within this universe, because there's multiple universes. And on top is one of them. The rest of them are still in the stem of the lotus. And they come out after some, Brahma brings them out. But so he appears on the stem, on the flower atop of the stem of the lotus. And in his self-searching mode, he wants to know, where am I? And who am I? And what am I doing here? What am I supposed to be doing? And what's my, all those questions that people are usually too busy to ask. He asks. He searches by empiric method. He's intelligent. I'm on this lotus, and maybe if I climb down the stem far enough, I'll find out where I came from. So he climbs down and down and down and down and down and down, and he can't find the end of the stem. Then he has this realization, I guess by empiric inspection, I'm not going to find out where I came from. And then he hears, tapa, tapa, tapa. And he's very intelligent. He knows what that means. If we just heard tapa, we go, what? Or, oh, no. But he's intelligent. That's what we find in the ninth chapter. In Sri Brahma Samhita, we find something additional, which is the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, has his internal potency, Lakshmi. And one of the expansions of Lakshmi, or we can say one of the co-wives of Mahavishnu, her name in that case is Rama Devi. So one of the expansions of the internal potency is Saraswati, distinct from the goddess of learning in this universe who is the wife of Lord Brahma. It's the internal potency, Saraswati, gives the holy names. to Lord Brahma. The Gopal Gayatri Mantra, if you want to know what it is, you can read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Sri Brahma Samhita. It's there. It's also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But they're names of Krishna, just like we're chanting names of Krishna. They're names of Krishna in a particular form. And that's the tapa that he's supposed to do. And he understands all that. Just, you know, and Saraswati says, by the chanting of this mantra, all your desires will be fulfilled. Now, we have material and spiritual desires, and Brahma had spiritual, inquisitive desires. He also had the desire to create, in one sense, a material desire. So that was to be fulfilled also. It was fulfilled also. He chanted that Gopal Gayatri Mantra according to the Srimad Bhagavatam and our Acharyas for 1,000 years. We're just here for 4th of July weekend. His was 10,000 years. Excuse me, 1,000 years. But they're not just like our solar years. They're some other kind of celestial years. And then Mahavishnu, he was just in Yoga Nidra. It's described that the universes were just floating on the causal ocean, one of which was Lord Brahma, who's received this Gopal Gayatri Mantra. And Mahavishnu is just enjoying his pastimes with Brahma Devi internally in Yoga Nidra. And then Krishna played on his flute. Of course, he's playing on his flute eternally. But Brahma heard Krishna's flute. It went in his ear. And it came out in the form of another Gayatri Mantra, which he then meditated upon and realized his identity. And he realized all kinds of nice things that are found in our Sri Brahma Samhita, Govindam Adi Purusham verses. He became fully Krishna conscious by chanting his mantra. So that's what we're here for this weekend. At least to become more fully Krishna conscious than we are before we got here, or were before we got here. And that is a great mystery, this word, rahasyam. Sarahasyam tad angam cha. Grahana. Grahana means just take it up. You know, like, just do it. But not, you know, go to the store and buy some Nike stuff. The other kind, the spiritual kind, just grahana. Bring it within your heart. Bring this instruction as Brahma did, because when he appeared, there wasn't anything or anyone. There wasn't even light. It was darkness in all directions. Pretty spooky. Pretty lonely. What are you going to do? I quit. Let me out of here. There's no here. There's no other place to go. There was nothing. But he wasn't a weak-minded person. He was very qualified, is very qualified. And he took up the process. And by taking up the process, this verse is saying, one can fully realize. Lord Vishnu is saying to Lord Brahma, by taking up this process, one can fully realize everything about me. Everything. Well, at least everything that a conditioned soul can know. I want to spend a little bit of time with this word, sa-rahasyam. Sa means with, rahasyam. So Prabhupada has translated it, you know, explicitly, with devotional service. Elsewhere this word is used, sa rahasyam. It means that which is very confidential. So a couple of examples how the same phrase, sa rahasyam, is used is in the 10th canto, chapter 45, where Sandipani Muni is teaching Krishna and Balaram. He teaches them Danur Ved, among other things, and he teaches them the very confidential portion of Danur Ved, the Sarahasyam. And it's explained by Acharyas that that means there are mantras, and there are deities of those mantras, and there, within those mantras, there's great power. And all of that was disclosed very confidentially by Sandipani Muni, Sarahasyam. The confidential portion of Danur Ved. Then another example that's given is in the first canto, where Narada is explaining to Vyas about his previous life and then his birth as Narada and his overall his self-realization. And that's a mystery, isn't it? I mean, I find besides his very attractive personality, it's mysterious. He's born as the direct son of Brahma. There's so many things mysterious about him. He's born as a direct son of Brahma amongst many rishis, but he is the chief amongst them, and he has a spiritual body. From his the previous day of Brahma, because that means the night of Brahma, the night of Brahma is really long. How long is the night of Brahma? 4,300,000,000 years. Times 1,000. No, 4,300,000,000 is his night of Brahma. So he has a spiritual form which he achieved in the previous end of the day of Brahma, and somehow he has the spiritual form in the body of Mahavishnu. Like, what's that? And then he comes as the son of Lord Brahma. And he's got a spiritual form. And he can travel anywhere he likes. Just playing upon his vina. You know anybody that can do that? He can go in the spiritual world. He can go to any planet in the material creation. He can go anywhere he likes. Just plays on his vina and sings songs about Krishna. Zoom, zoom, there he goes. And he has an uncanny way of knowing exactly where to be, and exactly what to say, and exactly what to do. You know anybody like that? He's a very mysterious personality. And he says to Vyas, I've explained these things. So some of those things, at least his birth and his activities in this life and previous life, he's given some indication to Vyas. And this same word is sarahasyam. It's to be understood only by devotional service. I don't know if some of you, probably older generation people, have read about Narada from sources other than Vaishnava sources. Maybe some of you have. They don't understand Narada at all. I don't even want to say it. They have a wrong understanding of Narada. Let's just leave it at that. As people that don't hear Bhagavad Gita in disciplic succession, they have a wrong understanding of Bhagavad Gita. It's this means that. Always. It's interpretation because the direct meaning they can't enter. Because they haven't heard from the right source, nor do they have devotional inclination. So they can't understand. They're prevented from understanding. It remains a mystery. So how do you enter into the mystery? That sarahasyam. The mystery is devotional service. Sarahasyam, another way of translating Sarahasyam is, besides mystery, it's devotional service. Devotional service is a mystery. Let me read the questions directly asked by Lord Brahma, and you'll get, you know. He's not us. He's the most intelligent being in creation. He's the first one, but he's the most intelligent one. You know, he's the professor of all engineering schools. He's the dean of all deans. Every mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, civil engineering, you name it. What engineer can put together a universe? What engineer can make a mosquito? Prabhupada said, let them make one mosquito. So small, why not? And he can go this direction, that direction, that direction, any direction, no problem. And he can duplicate himself. Let them make one mosquito. But Brahma didn't just make one mosquito. He made a lot of mosquitoes. And a lot of other things. And how to understand how that machine works, it's a big mystery. But Brahma understood it. So that person is asking the following four questions. They're very nice. I'll go back. This is preceding this verse on the board here. The personality of Godhead is speaking. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Such penance is my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I are non-different. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it by the same energy. Therefore, potential power is penance only. So that the Sanskrit word is tapasa. We have our tapasa as devotees. No little ones, not 1,000 celestial years of chanting your mantra in darkness. And it doesn't say he ate anything either. And all the other things of bodily functions, there's no mention of them. 1,000 celestial years. That's a long time to fast. And whatever else you do, you know, for 1,000 celestial years. Lord Brahma said, so here's his questions. Oh, personality of Godhead, you are situated in every living entity's heart as the supreme director, and therefore you are aware of all endeavors by your superior intelligence without any hindrance whatsoever. So because you're qualified like that, in spite of that, my Lord, I am praying to you to kindly fulfill my desire. He's got four questions. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. Like, you know, from something fully spiritual, how does something material come? Good question. It's mysterious. Through the medium of devotional service, it can be not only theoretically understood, it can be fully realized. Next question. And please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies. So how does he work with his energies? For annihilation, generation, acceptance, maintenance, by combination and permutation. It's a cool word. Upabrimhita. You know, combining things, subtracting things, moving things. By manipulating your energies in various ways. How do you do this? Because he's going to have to be the instrument for Mahavishnu or Garbhadakshay Vishnu for doing that, the permutations and combinations thing. That's two. Now number three. O Master of all energies, please tell me philosophically about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. So from the body of the spider comes the web, and then he moves around the web. And then he can withdraw the web back into his body. So like a spider does, you do. How do you do it? Because I'm going to have to be your instrument to help you do it. So I need to know these things for my devotional service, or Brahma's devotional service. And his fourth question, please tell me, so that I may be taught in the matter, by the instruction of the personality of Godhead, as Vishnu, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. And specifically, the next is a request. Please keep me free from the pride. This is something we should all tune in on. The pride of thinking that I'm creating. Because it's very easy to theoretically say, yes, everything's the property of Krishna. It comes from Krishna, it belongs to Krishna. I'm going to leave this world with nothing, and it's all Krishna's. And then we start doing something, we get attached to that something, little piece of matter somewhere, and think it's ours and possessive, and something happens and it's something, you know. Identification with I and mine, the bodily conception, and that which comes from the body is mine. Being in Maya, it's like we're very accustomed to it. Even we have theoretical knowledge. So he's praying to not get drawn into that, not become proud of the creation, and in the sense of being the creator, like forgetting Krishna. Please protect me from pride. Then comes this verse. So the Lord says, okay, I'll answer your questions, both theoretically, and that is also to be combined with practical realization. And it's supremely confidential. It's very, very subtle. But it's possible to understand through the medium of devotional service. And otherwise, it's a mystery. In the purport, which we read, Prabhupada uses the word mystery 5 times. Whenever anybody were to speak of our founder, Acharya, repeats something so many times, we could understand it's important. He wants us to understand it, to pay attention. So, mystery, 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 mystery. The medium of disclosure of the mystery is devotional service. And then it's not over. This is the preamble to the four essential verses. And the last one, so this is 31. So that the essential verses are 32, 33, 34, and 35. So in verse 35, it's the final of the four Chaturshloki verses. And he uses the word mystery more than 5 times, like 8 or 9 times. Mystery, mystery, mystery. Because the personality of Godhead has disclosed to Brahma the answer, which to others remains a mystery, but to Brahma will be understood, and to those of us who hear it, in the mood of devotional service, to assist us in properly carrying out our devotional service, we can understand the mystery. Let me just read. I'll just read the parts that speak this word mystery several times, and then I'll say something about chanting, and then we're done. So in the final purport, Prabhupada writes, the impersonalists can imagine or even perceive that the Supreme Brahman is all-pervading. And therefore they conclude that there is no possibility of his personal form. So by the ascending process, the topmost position that one can reach is beyond duality, there's absolute. They're not capable of seeing varieties within the absolute, and so they think it's homogenized. Brahman. It's all one. In the highest stage of realization, everything is all one. And the Brahman existence, Brahman reality. Because they can't imagine it or conceive of it, therefore they declare God has no form. Herein lies the mystery of his transcendental knowledge. The mystery is transcendental love of Godhead. And one who is surcharged with such transcendental love of Godhead can without difficulty see the personality of Godhead. In every atom, you got to have like really fine vision to see inside the atom. And every movable or immovable object. But Prahlad Maharaj had that capacity, isn't it? When Hiranyakashipu asked him, where is this Vishnu? His answer was, he's everywhere. Is he in this pillar? Yes. He was in the pillar. And he's within the atom of everything. At the same time, he can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode, Goloka, enjoying eternal pastimes with his eternal associates, who are all also expansions of his transcendental existence. This vision is the real mystery of spiritual knowledge. As stated by the Lord in the beginning, Sarahasyam Tadangam Cha. This verse. Because this is the last of the Chatrasloki verses. As it was proclaimed, it's now confirmed. This mystery is the most confidential part of the knowledge of the Supreme, and it is impossible for the mental speculators to discover by dint of intellectual gymnastics. Then down a little bit further. I'm not going to read all of it, but therefore, although he is present in every atom, the Supreme Personality of Godhead may not be visible to the dry speculators. Still, the mystery is unfolded before the eyes of the pure devotees because their eyes are anointed with love of Godhead. So, with devotional service comes this full form of love of Godhead. And we're not there yet. We're doing vaidhi sadhana bhakti, you know, to a greater degree or lesser degree. Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And that even in that, according to Rupa Goswami, even that vaidhi sadhana bhakti, it counts as devotional service. In fact, it counts as pure devotional service. I'll explain. The topic of nectar devotion is devotional service. Rupa Goswami says pure devotional service devotional service itself is pure, just like water is pure. Then it may get contaminated, but water is pure. Air is pure. It may get, you know, stinky because of contact with something that's fermenting or rotting. But the air, the aroma in the air may stink, but the air is pure. And the water is pure. So devotional service is also pure. And part of what our in the beginning stage, in the vaidhi bhakti stage, is to purify. And in one sense, get rid of the contamination part and to strengthen the pure part, the unalloyed, unmixed with karma and gyan part, but increasing one and decreasing the other, increasing the wanted, decreasing the unwanted simultaneously. We've been discussing this in our the Bhagavatam class in the, before you all came here. In another context, it was the sages speaking about the duties of a king to King Vena, nasty King Vena. You know, this is what makes a king a good king. He protects the citizens from the bad things, and he engages the citizens in the elevating things. So the Vedas, he follows the Vedic codes. We should follow the Vedic codes. Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti does these two things. Just like the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Cheto Darpana Marjana, the impure things are extinguished. And then the awakening of the desire to serve Krishna. On the positive side, besides the cleansing side, the awakening of the desire to serve Krishna through the chanting of the holy name. So devotional service begins in that way, isn't it? We go part of our program. It was supposed to be last night, but the weather was not so good. But chanting the holy name. We go in the public and chant the holy name. It's not something, oh, Prabhupada did that, but now is a different time. Sorry. It's, you know, it was good 500 years ago, and it's good, you know, 20 years ago, and it's good today, and it's good another, you know, 10,000 years. It's good. Chanting the holy name congregationally for the audition of the public is good. Devotional service begins that way. The awakening of an attraction for Krishna in principle. The desire to serve Krishna. And you know, how the public reacts may be all kinds of different things because of conditioning. I remember hearing Bhakti Chaitanya Swami describing his first, you know, how he responded to Harinam Sankirtan. He lived in London. He's not British, he's from Australia. But he was there, I don't know, work or school or something. And downtown London is this temple in Soho Street. So every day the devotees would go a certain route. And he, you know, fortunately, he was thinking, unfortunately, my job is right near the same place where they go in Harinam. So when he would see the devotees coming down the street, he'd go on the other side of the street. Because he just didn't want to encounter. But, you know, if you... Just that association. He's such a wonderful Vaishnava. Ooh, such a wonderful Vaishnava. Just that contact with the holy name. Did the people who were going out doing Harinam have an idea that, you know, a future great luminary is somewhere on the opposite side of the street trying to avoid our Harinam? They weren't, they had, you know, Krishna knew, but the devotees that go in Harinam, we don't know. We do know one thing, Krishna likes it. And it's beneficial for awakening the soul to service to Krishna. So I'm just going to end with one verse from Canto 6, Chapter 3, where Shukadeva Goswami is summarizing the whole Ajamila story, because he narrated it for a purpose. The purpose of narrating the Ajamila story was to explain to Maharaj Parikshit how to help people become free from suffering the reactions of their sins. In Kali Yuga, there's a lot of sin. What is to be done as the antidote to counteract the reactions of those sins? And the answer was devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name. And then he narrated the Jamil. For example, this is the story of one who became relieved from the reactions of his sins by chanting the holy name, even unintentionally. So when we go on Harinam, you'll see all kinds of responses. Some people put their ears, hand over their ears. Some people smile. Some people dance. Some people are intoxicated and they sing and, you know, carry on like And that, you know, anyway, they do all kinds of different things. But hearing and chanting is purifying. We should have that confidence. It makes the devotees happy to know that the soul is being cleansed. It's the most powerful activity that we can do for our own cleansing and for the benefit of others, whatever their understanding of what we're doing is or isn't. And some persons become attractive, and some persons will come to the temple. You'll see, just from that, if we're alert and, you know, invite them to the temple, those things will go on. So here's text 22 from chapter 3, canto 6, famous verse. Etavaneva lokesmin pungsang dharma parasmritaha bhakti yoga bhagavati tannama grahanadibihi. Devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. So it's Bhagavat Bhakti, or devotional service to Bhagavan. Devotional service to Bhagavan is the ultimate religious principle, and it begins tan nama grahanadibihi. Tan nama, tat as a pronoun, it's his holy name, the holy name of Krishna. Beginning with the holy name of Krishna. Adi. At the beginning, so it means then, etc. Devotional service followed by, beginning with the holy name, followed by all the other things, which is same as this verse. Sarahasyam tadangam cha. Tadangam. With appropriate paraphernalia, and Prabhupada presents, there's these five processes. So chanting begins with, before you chant, you hear. Even if it's something that happened in your previous life, like Gajendra, the elephant, from his previous life as King Indradumna, he had learned these prayers. So in great calamity, he started chanting them. They came to his mind and he chanted them. So we may find some attraction for the holy name and some benefit in the begin, even in the very beginning stages, from chanting the holy name. If we make offenses, then that attraction may pale or fade, and then it becomes a struggle rather than something that we're attracted to. And then it becomes, oh, I've got to do my chanting. So the primary feature of the chanting of the holy name, primary feature, there's many. Lord Chaitanya teaches them in Shikshastakam. But the primary feature is it awakens the dormant desire to serve Krishna, because that's asleep or dormant. And in place of the desire to serve Krishna, it's another program. Desire to enjoy independently of Krishna, which is covering the desire to serve Krishna. So the desire to serve Krishna becomes awakened. It's likened to a match that can sit in a matchbox for as long as you let it sit there, in a dry condition anyway, and it'll just sit there. But you take the match out and strike the match on the striker, and whew, fire comes out. Like that, the tendency, the natural desire of the soul is service to Krishna, and it comes out through chanting. And then followed that chanting comes other forms of service that are nicely assisted by these other primary activities. Deity worship, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in a sacred place, or if one cannot do so, contemplating the wonderful transcendental abode of the personality of Godhead, where he performs wonderful pastimes. And sometimes go there in pilgrimage and enter into the mood of the Dham, and then come back to our place of preaching and and give Krishna consciousness to others. These are primary activities that are the angams, the limbs that assist us in this one most important activity, the chanting of Krishna's holy name. So we'll be doing some of all of those things, primary things, along with the primary thing amongst the primary things. The focus upon tannama grahanadibhi, bringing the holy name more closely to one's heart and entering into the mood of in the association of such nice devotees, the mood of glorifying Krishna and appreciating the wonderful nature, the compassionate, loving nature of Krishna, and moving towards that stage of love of God. And then the mysteries of Krishna will gradually become disclosed. It happens. Just stay fixed in the process of chanting and serving the devotees. I guess that's something that's worth saying. The Chicago Temple is hosting, and the devotees, I'm sure, are prepared, like substantially prepared, to be engaged in a service mood to serve all of you. And all of you can also, in different ways, as circumstance appears, help in, you know, serving the devotees in so many different ways. And it the mood of service to the devotees enriches the experience of chanting the holy name. This is Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Two principal things: serving the devotees and chanting the holy name. There's lots of opportunity to serve the devotees, and the forms of that are many. Even just being cordial and mixing and sharing realizations with one another and so on. There may be some practical activities, serving the prasadam or cleaning up after prasadam or whatever it is. It goes well with the purpose of our festival of the holy name. Okay, so any comments or questions on this topic? But hurry.
This isn't real important, but I'd never heard. You said there are two Saraswatis? You said there are two Saraswatis?
Yes.
I was just wondering if you could explain that a little bit. I never heard that.
Before the creation, the demigoddess within the universe doesn't exist as the demigoddess of learning. In fact, the universe doesn't exist. What to speak of the demigoddesses and goddesses and gods? And the demigods aren't created yet, and the demigoddesses aren't created yet. This is our acharyas, Jiva Goswami and others, commenting, explaining the internal potency of the Supreme Lord has multiple features. Rama is identified specifically in Sri Brahma Samhita. And one of those, she's known by different names. One of them is Yogamaya. One is Yoganidra. She's called Lakshmi. Another is Saraswati. And she, Saraswati, is the one who imparts the instruction to Lord Brahma. In Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary, in that verse, whatever it is, in the Brahma Samhita. Yeah. And other commentaries by our acharyas about that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta specifically commented, and Jiva Goswami commented. And in that connection, other acharyas have commented specifically the internal potency, Saraswati, in that that feature of her. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Narasimha. So in 9:35, Prabhupada was mentioning that impersonalists could go to the stage where they could perceive the absolute truth everywhere. Absolute truth is pervading everywhere. So I'm just trying to understand. I don't want to understand how absolute truth exists.
How what?
How the absolute truth exists in non-living entities, like in things so small as atom. Ontologically speaking, is it just external potency, or is super soul existing even in non-living?
You made a big jump. You went from Brahman to super soul. Everything is resting in Brahman. That's like, and Brahman is resting within Krishna, or Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman. You with me? Brahmano hi pratishtaham, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman, and everything is within Brahman. Brahman is everywhere. Just like a cloud that's in the sky. Within the cloud is the sky. Above the cloud is the sky. Below the cloud is the sky. Within the cloud is the sky. I hope. Because when you're, you know, zoom, 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 and you're taking off along the runway and you're in the sky. And you go through the cloud and there's no sky. The cloud is within the sky. And then you're above the cloud and you're still in the sky. Similarly, the cloud of material energy, Mahatattva, is within the spiritual sky, is within Brahman. Brahman pervades everything, and Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman. He pervades everything, aside from his Paramatma feature or super soul feature. He's the basis of Brahman, and therefore one can say he pervades everything. Although he's a person. Now, that's that last little comment, concept, is something impersonalists, they get whiplash when they hear that. No. Why are you limiting their language? One of them is, why are you limiting God by saying that he has form? That's limit. Form means limiting. And we say, no. This is limiting, but that's not limiting. With Krishna's form, he can do anything. Angani yasya sakalendri vritti, we say every morning. His limbs aren't like our limbs. His form is fully spiritual. Fully spiritual. Unlimitedly potent. So that's beyond the conception of impersonalists, because they can't even handle potencies, what to speak of form. That's the limit of their methodology of ascending process. So as Prabhupada writes very simply, this is beyond that. The existence of the potencies of Krishna, the opulences of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the name of Krishna, is totally beyond the impersonal conception. Okay? Anything else? Yes.
Marja, I had a question in regards to different types of service among the nine processes of devotional service. Specifically, what is the relationship? Are they this, like chanting, serving, and remembering? I thought I heard that Prahlad Maharaj was engaged in this smaranam. He actually, because of that, he had received a different destination, because his focus was on that process. Are they Can you explain, are they all absolute, the same, or in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, are they all equal? Is there different? I'm sorry it's not such a clear question, but...
Yeah, it's not at all a clear question. They're all absolute. Devotional service is absolute, and the nine angas are a part of that which is all absolute. There's a distinction between the destination of Vaikuntha, well, the destination of Brahman, the destination of Vaikuntha, and the destination of Goloka Vrindavan. Is that what your question is?
Well, in the spiritual world, are the different activities of service... you said they're all absolute, but
they're all absolute.
So engaging one is just as good as the other. And
yep.
I guess sometimes just the thought of like, I guess there's different mood of remembrance.
Yes.
It seems
that's
like a different form of service than
sure.
doing some practical.
Sure.
I mean, not necessarily practical, but some
sure.
different engagement.
Sure.
And the focus on chanting the holy name. So that is, of course, like you're saying, the most important or powerful service. But sometimes a neophyte conception we consider, I have to do some practical service.
Yeah.
So how do we develop that mood of service to the holy name?
By chanting the holy name. And by hearing the importance of chanting the holy name. And by associating with those that have an attraction for chanting the holy name beyond the idea of service is better, you know, practical service. It's like a little bit like the 12th chapter distinction of the perfection, found the regulations of bhakti, just work for me. There can be the just work for me, and I don't really have so much attraction for the regulations of bhakti. Somebody was inquiring about, you know, they have some service and they're engaging volunteers in service when they try to encourage the volunteers to do chanting. They know, I'll do any service, but I really don't have an attraction for chanting. So that's, you know, work for me. And then there's follow the regulations of bhakti yoga. And then there's the perfection. And in that perfection, one of the things is mind fixed upon me. So go down and there's like a process of devotional service. But Prahlad Maharaj wasn't just like practicing. He was doing other things too with his limbs. But in all those circumstances, his mind was fixed on Krishna. He's particularly glorified and appreciated in that way.
So if one is able to take shelter of the holy name, of take shelter of chanting, then that person had...
Remembrance is included.
Yeah.
It's a subset. If one does it properly.
That's a superior engagement of chanting the holy name compared to...
Superior engagement to what?
Well, you're saying...
It's our means of always remembering Krishna. It's our best means. One can remember Krishna other ways. One can do deity worship. One can cook. One can clean the temple and remember Krishna. But the best means of remembering Krishna when doing deity worship or cooking or cleaning the temple is through chanting. So the pujari may not be chanting the Maha Mantra while he's waving the chamara on the altar here. But that activity of worshipping the deity, which is one of the angas of primary angas of bhakti, is made possible because the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Upon that, so many things are supported. And they flow from that. Because the chanting awakens the desire to serve, and the expressions of service are diverse. All variegated, you know, in the spiritual world, all variegated. Not just, you know, the ISKCON kind. That's what we do in the regulated stage. All kinds of service. We can't do what Krishna's associates do in Vrindavan. That's like, you know, we're not qualified. But that's service, and we do our service in the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage, starting with chanting. So in that sense, most important. But you want to do this hierarchy thing, and yeah, I think that's where you're getting mixed up.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You're mentioning Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti.
Yes.
So in this stage, this could be a misconception. It seems very mechanical in essence. So I'm wondering how in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti we develop a higher taste to eventually be able to serve spontaneously.
Fantastic lead-in for the next class that I'm supposed to give at 11 o'clock. How to develop a taste for chanting. That's the topic. And I plan to discuss what you just asked. Be here at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. I think we'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.